Parashat Vayakhel and Pekudei, Shabbat Parah. This week's commentary was written and read by Rabbi Leonard A. Sharzer, Associate Director for Bioethics of the Lewis Finkelstein Institute for Religious and Social Studies, JTS. How now, brown cow? This Shabbat, we conclude the reading of the Book of Exodus with its two final parshiot, Vayakhel and Pekudei, which recapitulate the fundraising for and construction of the Mishkan, the tabernacle in the desert. It is also the third of the four special Shabbatot that precede the festival of Pesach, known as Shabbat Parah, because we read from the Book of Numbers the enigmatic statute of the red heifer. This statute deals with a purification ritual following contact with a dead body. It falls within the category of laws for which there is no rationale given in the Torah. Neither would it be possible to derive such a law on the basis of reason. It is a decree from God, and we are not permitted to question it. This ritual has several features in common with other purification practices, such as the scapegoat ritual of Yom Kippur and the purification of the leper. But some aspects are unique to it. I would like to review several components of the red heifer ritual that I find most challenging and ask two questions. First, is there any way to understand this arcane ritual that has resonance in modern times? And second, why do we read this passage shortly before Pesach? In the ritual, the Israelites are to bring to Moses a perfectly red, or according to some commentators, brown, cow, without blemish, which has never been yoked. It will be taken outside the camp and under the supervision of the deputy high priest be burned in its entirety, hide, flesh, blood, and dung, along with hyssop, cedar, and crimson wool, a total of 7 items. The ashes are then added to purifying waters, and the mixture is used to purify or decontaminate those who have become tamei, contaminated by contact with a corpse. A person who is tahor, that is, uncontaminated, sprinkles the water over the contaminated person on the 3rd and 7th day following contact, after which the contamination is said to be gone. The purification process is required when someone has died indoors for anyone who touches the corpse and for everyone in the tent. It is also required for anyone who comes in contact with a corpse or even a bone of someone who has died in the field, outside, whether from natural causes or not. The deputy high priest and the person who burns the cow become contaminated in the process, and when the water and ashes are used to decontaminate the corpse-defiled individual, the person who sprinkles the ashes and water becomes contaminated in the process. The paradox of the ashes and water, which contaminate the uncontaminated and decontaminate the contaminated, has interested commentators for generations. Maimonides, in The Guide for the Perplexed, writes about the efficacy of purification rituals in general. He says, "These ceremonies are of a symbolic character and serve to impress men with a certain idea and to induce them to repent." He goes on to say, "The easier the diffusion of uncleanliness, the more difficult and more retarded is its purification. Most easily is uncleanliness communicated by the dead body to those who are under the same roof, especially to relatives. The purification can only be completed by means of the ashes of the red heifer, however scarce it may be, and only in 7 days. The contamination from a corpse is not only easily acquired, but very common. In our time, when the process of dying has become so medicalized, few of us who are not healthcare professionals have the experience of being in the tent. We must remember, however, that until very recently, people did not typically die in hospital ICUs surrounded by professional staff, but at home, surrounded by loved ones. Therefore, occasions to acquire tumat met, the contamination from the dead, were frequent. Perfectly red cows, on the other hand, ones with no black or white hairs whatsoever, are extremely rare. It is inconceivable that even in biblical times there were enough cows to accommodate the need. Rather, this entire passage, with its repetitive detail and numerous references to the number 7, is more like a magical formula designed to teach us something about the nature of life and death. Death is not merely the absence of life, not merely a negative category. Anyone who has been part of a Chevra Kedisha and has participated in a tahara, the washing of the dead body, recognizes that the deceased is a positive presence. What's more, death, all death, has an effect on us all, whether it is someone close in the tent or a stranger in the field, whether by natural causes like a tornado or by killing like at Chardon High School. We are affected. We must pay attention. We must pay attention because there is no red heifer to decontaminate us, and probably there never was. What relation has all this to Pesach? On one level, it is clear that slavery is a kind of death. It is the death of freedom, of individuality, of personhood itself. We are reminded in the Maftir reading for Shabbat Parah that there is no red heifer. There is no way to cleanse ourselves of the contamination of contact with the slavery of discrimination, of unfairness, of inequality. The only way to be free of the taint of complicity is to be proactive in eliminating the source. Finally, there is the key paradox of the red heifer, the ashes and water that decontaminate the contaminated and contaminate the uncontaminated. It is said that everything in nature contains its opposite. We are reminded, as we approach the paradigmatic festival of liberation, that we were freed not to be able to act without restraint, but in order to establish a just society. Ours is not the libertarian notion of freedom so prevalent in contemporary political discourse. Our freedom is one which comes with obligation. It is this paradox of which we are reminded in these weeks preceding Pesach, by the reading of the fantastical tale of the perfectly brown cow.